The last days. Every generation regards their times as the norm or normal because they have not experienced other times. And to understand the uniqueness of the last days and the last times of our day and the new day that is before us, we must grasp something of how it was before. The last days occurs three times in the Old Testament and five times in the New. I won't go through these. You can find them easily with your computer devices. The last days is a common expression in both the Old and the New Testament. Now, the seven churches of Revelation, we find the last two are Philadelphia and Laodicea. There's not an eighth church. Laodicea is the last. For some moments, let's look at the world as it was before 1874. And then we will look at the day as it is rising in our own times. The past world and ages are quickly passing before our eyes. When worlds and empires pass away, it is because they have proved futile and have outlived their usefulness for society. In some cases, they were overthrown by stronger dominating powers than those that went before. Then there were revolutions from within and shouts for new solutions. But mostly, worlds passed away like a scroll of the ages and dispensations according to the divine finger and timetable. It was all a grand lesson in the permission of evil and the need for a good. So we are looking at a new world that will not pass away. For we read in Daniel chapter 7, verse 14, and there was dominion, it was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that shall not be destroyed. In this respect, we are both watchers of the passing of the old and also agents of the new order. Ours is not to support, advocate, promote, or even to contend or debate the cause of the fallen empires. Our mission is above the horizon of human schemes. To understand the uniqueness of the last times and our day, we must grasp something of how it was before our day. It's always a problem with a generation that if we think the world has always been like it is today, it was not. Paradise in Eden was a world all of its own. The laws were clear and everything necessary for human life and happiness was within those borders. But because of disobeying the law, God's law, the first couple were expelled. And we may think that that world passed away, but not so. It was only dormant, like the tree in Daniel, the fourth chapter, bound with copper and with iron. The fact that cherubims were posted at the entrance indicates that the first world order in Eden will be restored for the final world order. A world did pass away with a deluge to purge the earth of a foreign invasion and infection. Faithful Noah and his immediate family escaped after years of preparing an ark to stem the tidal waves that removed that old world order. Appropriately, Jesus used this very event to forecast the removing of all subsequent institutions and giving way to the new world order of Messiah in Matthew 24, verse 37. As in the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. So shall the parousia of the Son of Man be. And Peter uses exactly the same analogy in 2 Peter 3, 4 through 8. And that world did pass away. Other ages following the flood and empires passed away, such as the age of the patriarchs. And then the Jewish age passed with the declaration that their house was left to them desolate. At least at least until ye shall say, Blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. Matthew 23:38-39. And then there was the glory of Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. They passed away. Even the Roman dragon gave to the beast its power and great authority in Revelation 13:2. All this was Nebuchadnezzar's dream of the image of a golden head and feet mixed with clay. Centuries later, another floodgate opened that threatened papal control. The 1400s saw the emergence of the Gutenberg printing press. People were starved to hear information beyond the mandates of kings and priests. This was a great threat to the old world. Populations now could read and interpret it for themselves. In fact, this year we are just 500 years from Luther's 95 theses. The Reformation spread like wildfire throughout Europe. But the cause and effect reached further than simply religious reform. It extended to universities, science, invention, industry, world exploration, and trade. But the Reformation wounded the old Roman beast with its 7 heads and 10 horns. But the Reformers did not kill it. Institutions don't yield or die so easily. They usually just reinvent themselves. Their age and dominion did not quite end yet. Today, both Catholics and Lutherans say the Reformers and the Reformation was a great mistake or just a misunderstanding. But centuries ago, kings and princes dared to declare their independence of Rome. England, France, Germany, Switzerland, and the Russian Empire formed their own monarchies independent of Rome. The Americas became the land of immigration and refugees from the old world and old world oppression. The American tea tax and Declaration of Independence in 1776 from dependence on England was the spark that struck the imagination of French thinkers. People empowered with a printed page overturned the French throne in 10 years from 1789 to 1799. Both American and French revolutions are termed populist in today's language. Looking back, we see that the year 1799, an old world did indeed pass away. Prophecy pictures the French Revolution as a flood in Revelation, the 12th chapter, verses 15 and 16. And you know, floods sweep away trusted foundations, and they also sweep away old philosophies. The thirst for truth and information moved into high gear after the French Revolution. The few expensive copies of Bibles translated by Wycliffe, Luther, Tyndale, were not quite enough for the hungering peoples. All the Bible societies were formed in barely 10 years between 1803 and 1813. From here, the sacred word began to spread among all languages and nations with the power of the press. It was the work of the gospel of the kingdom shall be preached into all the world for a witness unto all nations. This period from 1799 to 1874 is the most remarkable period in history. Those 75 years were a force with lessons that had not been seen in the previous 6,000 years. The world changed in 1800 under the watch of the Philadelphia Church and prepared the stage for Laodicea, when the Christ body will be complete. The old world passes away, and the revealing of the new order is on the stage of history. All the powers of the present evil world hastily fortified their thrones in those 75 years. Powers of the old world occupied 4 distinct areas: social, political, military, and economic. For 75 years, they proposed on one hand to pacify and appease the public, and on the other hand, propped up their own institutions and empire building. Daniel saw this window of history as being between the 1260 and the 1335 days. This is still within the period of the times of the Gentiles, in which they were allowed to rule. But they might have well known that their days were numbered. Yet even Satan, as the strong householder, did not know just when his house would be invaded by a thief, a mightier monarch than was he. This was the world as it was just preceding 1874, before the seventh day for Adam's family. The end of this sixth day was a very labor-intensive time. Historians call this era the Age of Empire. Some call it the last of the dynasties. Others have labeled it the Industrial Revolution and the Age of Enlightenment. Here are a few headlines of those 75 years. Tsar Alexander curtailed Poland's right to self-government. German decrees increased government regulation on universities, limiting what was taught, and made the way for censorship of German newspapers. In 1816, starving workers rioted in England. In 1845, and lasting for 6 years, the potato famine killed over 1 million men, women, and children in Ireland and caused another million to flee the country. The sun never set on England's colonial empire. Russian expansionism had no limit. The armies of Tsar Nicholas and Alexander II were like a bear that challenged even the Ottoman Empire. A German and Austria confederation on the Rhine dominated Central Europe for decades. Arranged marriages between thrones of neighboring states hoped to secure an enduring peace. This was the culture just before our Lord's return. Still monarchies and monarchs of the old world danced and sang while a world was dying beneath them. A kind of euphoria spread over the world with a sense that their frontiers were invincible. The socially elite and princes feasted in palaces, totally oblivious that their world was on the edge of collapse and would also soon pass away. No world order can survive for long without moral integrity of their leaders, or without the wisdom of history's lessons, or without compassion and investment in the needs of humanity around them. That must wait for the new world order, and it was not quite yet. This was an era when the elite regarded themselves exempt of the burdens they put upon the people, and indeed exploited those who planted and harvested their fields. James 5:1-7 records the cries of the reapers. The message for the Lord's people was, "Be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord." This time was marked with forces of both good and evil, and both visionaries and skeptics. The bad part was like a cancer working in the world. It was an era of slave trade in America and other pretentious nations. Another cancer was affecting both science and philosophy. In 1859, Charles Darwin published a new evolutionary theory in The Origin of Species. Though Jewish discrimination prevailed through the diaspora on religious grounds, it was in these 75 years that antisemitism turned to racial antisemitism, encouraged by the work of racial theorists. Such theories advocated the superiority of white Aryans over Semitic Jews. In contrast, Revelation commended Philadelphia Church for their good work. They were spared from an even greater hour of temptation. But we are not. In those 75 years, there was a good working. In the 1830s, there was William Miller searching time and prophecy. In the 1840s, Henry Finnis Clinton published Civil and Biblical Chronology. In the 1850s, Dean Henry Alford assembled a New Testament Greek and critical commentary, of which we still use today. In the 1860s, Edward Elliott, a premillennial writer, introduced Bowen's chronology. Also in the 1860s, Constantine Tischendorf, a leading biblical scholar, gave us the Codex Sinaiticus. In the 1870s, Friedrich Farrar of England expounded the life of Christ. In fact, he wrote it in 1874, as no writer had written before. In the 1870s, H. Broughton Guinness explored dispensationalism with his books on the last days and the end of the age. Strong's and Young's concordances were prepared for truth seekers. McClintock and Strong's and Lang's commentaries opened the doors for biblical research. Joseph Rotherham published a critical rendering of both the Old and New Testament. This opened more doors to true meaning of Scripture than before. And remarkably, most of you have those on your computers access today, even beyond the printed page. So materials were being assembled in the Philadelphia church, of which would be a great blessing for the Laodicean church. Now, none of this is to say that those before saw all the open scroll or fully understood the divine plan of the ages. However, the stage was being set and the table prepared for those who would welcome the passing of an old order and to receive Earth's new king, who was about to bring meat into season for the watchers and seal the passing of the present evil world. What lay ahead was the day of the Lord. And so now we would like to turn our attention to this day. We come to a changing of the guard. The curtain began to rise on a new stage of history. The last days, the day of the Lord, except for the watchers, little seemed to change at first. But for the watchers, these past 143 years from our times, we see that the theater has a new orchestrator. Old players were still on the, and are still on the stage, but now their old scripts are being exposed. Two almost forgotten things occurred in 1874. They may not seem so great in today's technology, but they marked the change. First was a patent was filed in October 1874 for the incandescent light bulb by a Canadian, Henry Woodward, and later sold to Thomas Edison. Secondly, the Norwegian Gerhard Hansen identified and isolated the bacterium that causes leprosy. This led directly to the treatment or to the arrest of the disease, but did not and has not yet restored the damage that occurs because of that affliction. Symbolically looking back, a new era was just opening that would introduce light and deal with the permission of evil that prevailed for the previous 6,000 years on account of sin like a leprosy. Small beginnings were about to flood the world. In volume 4, Brother Russell uses the expression, just retribution. And he uses the term summary justice. This means that all the issues of and previous of past ages are revealed and they are arraigned, they are exposed in this day of the Lord. The good and the light will begin to prevail over the bad and the darkness. Early in this new day, there was the Jewish Benjamin Disraeli, who served twice as Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. His second term began in 1874 and continued until 1880. It was in the second term that marked a new map for Europe. A new map for Europe and the Middle East and indeed the world for the past 143 years. Here's a small excerpt from Encyclopedia Britannica. Foreign policy largely occupied him until 1878. The Russian-Turkish conflict had lain dormant since the Crimean War in the 1850s. But Christian subjects of the Ottoman Empire revolted against intolerable misrule. Russia declared war on Turkey in 1877 and reached the gates of Constantinople in 1878. Britain feared for the safety of the route to India, their trade routes. But Disraeli correctly judged that a show of force would be enough to bring the exhausted Russian forces to terms. The Treaty of Stefano, forced on Turkey by Russia, had to be submitted to a European Congress at Berlin in 1878. Beaconsfield attended and won all concessions he wanted. He returned to London in triumph, declaring that he had brought back peace with honor. But quietly, a new day was beginning for Israel. What was little noted in history, but vastly changed the future for returning favor to Israel, was that Palestine now fell under a new administration of England. Jews in the diaspora began to see a corridor to return to the land of promise. Indeed, in that very year, in 1878, the little settlement of Petah Tikva, meaning Gate of Hope, was established in the ancient homeland. Today, it has flourished into a foremost medical research and pharmaceutical center that overshadows all the other pharmaceutical works in the world. One may ask, if there was another lion, other than the Lion of England, at the 1878 Congress, another lion, the Lion of the King of Judah, had begun to roar. From the Berlin Congress in 1878, the posturing of world powers and borders also served to foment social unrest. Some have seen that it was the great framework for the revolt and ambitions that began the First World War, because the Berlin Congress rearranged the powers. The forces in Europe began to contend with one another. The real populations were struggling against their political mandates and began the First World War. Indeed, the guns of August in 1914 broke loose precisely 2,520 years from Nebuchadnezzar's torching with fire Jerusalem's temple and removed the crown from Zedekiah. 2,520 years. These great strokes of divine judgment occurred on the ninth of the Hebrew month Av, for both the beginning of the times of the Gentiles and also dating the verdict for their demise. The torch of the first European war toppled thrones of Gentile czars, kaisers, and kings. Indeed, it was scarcely 40 years after 1878 that Lord Arthur Balfour promised the 1917 Zionist Congress Great Britain's best efforts to establish a homeland for the Jews. That is now, this year, exactly 100 years ago. It was 70 years after 1878 that Israel became a tree among the nations in 1948. It was as if the 70 years of their desolation was also marked by the returning of 70 years of their recovering processes. Looking back, world leaders may wish that they had never committed to those directions and mandates to establish a homeland for the Jews because of their contending vested interests. Yet unseen spiritual powers were compelling them to do so, and they lose their dreams of splendor and glory. At the same time, Israel's fig tree sprouts and puts forth leaves as a sign of Jesus' return. Well, Hitler deeply wounded the Jewish people, but he could not destroy the seed of Abraham. Anti-Semitism today is on the rise. You know, this year, the National Socialist Party won a sizable representation in Chancellor Merkel's German government. It's called the National Democratic Party. It's essentially the same as the Nazi Party years past. But the world will be amazed when the smallest people of the world are vindicated and the largest and the mighty are humbled. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 27. Not only have the winds of war and earthquake and revolution shaken the foundations of the earth, but judgmental plagues have revealed the arrogance and hypocrisy of priests and potentates in the ecclesiastical heavens. Isaiah 34, verse 4. And all the hosts of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll, and all their hosts shall fall down, as the leaf falleth off the vine, and as a falling fig from the fig tree. And then we have Revelation, the sixth chapter, Revelation 6, verses 14 through 16, where we read, And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. And the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman, and every free man, hid themselves in the dens of the rocks and the mountains, and said to the mountains and the rocks, Fall on us, and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb. So first of all, the scroll is rolled together, and then it is rolled apart. The ends of the ecclesiastical scroll are quickly rolling together. Both Catholic and Protestant presses declare, as we have said, the Reformation was a mistake, and are glad to unite against a growing Islamic threat that is now approaching 25% of the world population. Nearly 25%, almost one of four persons on the face of the earth are Islam, are Muslim. Catholics and Orthodox now embrace each other's institutions. Catholic, Lutheran, and Anglicans share the pulpit and the priesthood. 2 years ago, we were in Italy and visited the Vatican. Since then, this Pope has set up a statue of Martin Luther in the halls of the Vatican. They are, the ends of the scroll are embracing each other. Now the mighty men and financial wizards of the world are at their wit's end. The exploitation and emptiness of earthly gold and silver is expressed in James chapter 5, 1 to 4. When persons spend more money than their assets, we call them bankrupt, and they're forced to live within their means. You can't borrow anymore. In fact, their assets are removed. However, when nations overspend, they raise their debt limit and spend more than their creditors realize they will ever have a possibility of any return on the loan. You know what the American debt is today? Just this little corner of the world? $20 trillion. The exposure of this will bring the house of cards to collapse. It cannot sustain itself. Political and military might are unable to stop the terror. Blood and poison runs in the streets of Syria, Libya, Afghanistan, Somalia, and to say nothing about other African states. It's a scene that tears at the heart. Starving populations that are exploited by their own monarchs. Desperate refugees are fleeing and overrunning Europe and changing the social landscape. Yet abundant, even with abundant and generous food donations, which are blocked by self-serving magistrates from ever reaching their starving and dying populations, it's not a matter of supply of the good things of this earth that people could share, but they're self-serving, are in their ivory towers, and manipulating the forces at hand to exterminate their own peoples. Such is the world that is passing away. We are watching the terror and anarchy that erupt in most civilized and uncivilized cities of the world. We need not be immersed in those conflicts. We need not shout. We need not declare fears with the fears of the world, or the demands of the media that we are watching the forces of Joel 2 and 3. They are mustering for the final passing of the old world. Ours is not a voice to sustain or invent something new of human schemes. Our vision is above the horizon, for a new order that will truly bring peace. The old world is passing. And Joel 2 and 3 saw this. It is the world of the Lord's great army. You know who that is. It's not you and me. But it's the voices of those that are truly informed, the desperate, the haves and the have-nots, are struggling one against another and they're colliding. The oppressed of every nation are being hurt. The collision between capital and labor, socialism and capitalism, financial giants and the tillers of the land, ecclesiastical delusions and those that are demanding truth, truth. The European Union was conceived with some glorious memories of the old Roman Empire. Very fascinating to study the European Union, 1957 after the Second War. It was not just an economic union. They had the glory of the old past to be reunited with a Christian ethic. One of the reasons that Turkey has not been allowed in. Memories of the Roman Empire. It is now trembling with bankrupt members and exits. Germany has a resurgence of national socialism. Nations are resorting to authoritarian and autocratic rule and desperate to hold ancient dreams and stem the tidal force of the Lord's great army. Autocratic rulers. We might not have thought some years ago that even the Western world would be subject to such heavy hands. Religion and state are looking to each other for mutual survival. Economics have invented digital money to fuel the old world. Sometimes check the internet about Bitcoin and digital money. So brethren, where are we today? Where are we today? What is passing? And what is being inaugurated before our eyes? Don't say, nothing has changed. It is easy to lose our focus in the blitz of news and opinion, sound bites and commercialism, urgency, expedience, and distraction press us on every side. We need conventions like this to calm our mind and refocus our vision and strengthen our hearts. Terror and fear on every horizon. This is the hour of temptation. After the 40 years with the voice of that seventh angel, the Laodicean messenger, the Lord's people have become troubled with many questions, fears, and yes, also some doubts. Here are some of the things that have passed our desk in these years. Is there still harvesting work, planting work, or is there nothing left? Was the plan and chart of the ages the work of the pastor, or were there other questionable sources that drew that plan? Should we update the definitions for justification, covenants, restitution? Are Israel and the ancient worthies, or neither, the people of the new covenant? Is Christ's return only metaphorical, or perhaps somehow cosmically different from being here personally? Has the kingdom of the millennium begun, or are we yet to look for it? Are we to regard scholars of history and archaeology with a new chronology, time, and prophecy, as better than what we once had? Or is there still substance and evidence for the faith once delivered unto the saints? These are questions that have troubled some over the years of this hour of temptation. A calm, rational, and personal return to our roots is necessary to maintain our equilibrium in this day. With our feet firmly planted on the foundation, we are better prepared to examine the questions of our times, to understand something of the stately steppings of Earth's new king. Watchmen are still on the walls of the new Jerusalem, searching the horizon, speaking with one another, clad with the armor and prepared with their lamps, their pitchers, the sword, and the trumpet of Gideon's band. I guess my time's about up. Well, dear friends, we hear the earnest tones of biblical, prophetic, and personal questions of our times. How can we lift our principles and raise ourselves above the degenerating society around us? How can we lift up a weak and faltering fellow? How can the voice of and trumpet of truth be spread abroad? Is there a faithful remnant being prepared in Israel's Jewish population? Where is Israel's posture regarding the Temple Mount or sovereignty over disputed land? Does Turkey, Iran, Arabs, Russia have agendas regarding Israel and noted in the scriptures? What is Armageddon, Jacob's trouble, Gog and Magog, Ezekiel and Zechariah prophecies mean? What about Luther's 500 years and Balfour's 100 years? Are they still relevant? Why is the Vatican initiating major reforms and unification? What is behind a right-wing authoritarian global shift? How do physical storms, geographic traumas, and changes affect populations and economies? What is the cause and effect of this increased school, church, and public mass shootings? What events will bring the collapse of the old order and bring the desire of all nations? One voice says of such things, well, it really doesn't matter. It will all turn out right in the end. But another voice says, I want to be a light on a hill and a watchman to declare what I see. 2 Peter 3 is a concise outline of the day of the Lord. It is the day when the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. 2 Peter 3:12. The day of his return and presence is compared to the water of Noah's day, in which the old world passes away. It begins with a day of unprecedented trouble and proceeds for 1,000 years for the blowing away of the dust of past ages and replanting of Eden and healing of the peoples of the earth. Because the prophecy concludes in the next verse, verse 13, according to his promise, we look for a new heavens and a new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness. Jesus' return is like a thief in the night in which the heavens pass away with a great noise and afterward revealed with the rising sun of the day with healing in his wings. A trumpet is now sounding louder than the French Revolution, demanding justice, liberty, and truth and recompense. But the world doesn't know who is sounding the alarm or how to silence it. The media and interest and the internet are not the cause but the means by which the message reaches the ears of a generation waiting with open eyes and ears for a better answer than they now hear. Why has all this now occurred after 6,000 years of history? It is because the Lord of the Sabbath is here. Otherwise, we would not see the world as it is. He is mustering the forces of Joel chapter 2. He is allowing humanity to discard their dependencies and declare, I will shake all nations, and the desire of all nations shall come. Haggai 2:7. And Israel too will declare in due time, lo, this is our God, we have waited for him. Like all biblical days, the day begins not with a calm sunshine, they begin with a night. Israel's days began with a night, and they finish with the sunshine. This day of the Lord begins with a night of weeping as the new day challenges every form of darkness. But joy comes in the morning. Then, Isaiah 9, verse 7, will be realized. Of the increase. Notice that word, increase. Of the increase, not that the inception, but occurs with the increase and the progress of his government. And peace there shall be no end upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. That means that it first begins and then grows like the stone in Daniel 2. A world of 6,000 years of experience is passing before our very eyes. A new day is rushing in. Blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear.